So, the Australian Open's shaping up. Do you think it's gone quickly, slowly, medium? Do you know what day it is? Grand Slam life is full on, isn't it? It's long, it's full on.
It's long and it's full on, and you know it's going to be long and full on, but then when you're in it, it feels really long and I think it's gone quite quickly. I think one of our aims this podcast, we're not going to mention the name of that person who's not here. Shall we make a deal on that at the beginning?
Oh, okay, the whole thing.
Yeah.
When was the last time we didn't mention that person who's not here?
Oh, I thought you were about to do it. we're not going to mention that name, but once everything with that happened and we got into the tennis, I think it's flown by. I think it's, what are we, day? We are recording this, technically, my side, it's Sunday, technically.
Yeah, morning. Okay.
Just.
I'm on Saturday.
Just. I'm 2 minutes into... 2 minutes into Sunday morning, and I think it's been great, because the thing is, there were so many good stories leading up to the Open, and then all the stuff happened and we weren't really talking about the actual tennis on the court, and I think it's just picked up from there. The crowds are in. They say 50% on some courts, but that's definitely
They haven't reached it, have they? It's not hit 50%, I think.
Well, some court, when there's
a lot of the time
been an Aussie playing, when Nick Kyrgios was playing Daniil Medvedev, he was definitely over 50. But I don't know how they snuck in. But Rod Laver was looking quite full, I would say. But the fact, you know, the fans are out. The weather brings them out. It's nice. It feels normal. Do you know what I mean? It feels, of all the slams we've done during the pandemic, I think this probably feels the most normal.
With the most abnormal lead up. With the person who's with it, not yes. here.
This is going to be, this is he who shall not be named. This is actually going to be quite difficult, especially as we're both tired, because you're upside down, aren't you, basically?
Upside down, inside out. That is me, absolutely. But I've been.
So what are your hours? Tell me your hours.
Late.
So what's your average?
I'm doing it for.
No, but what's your like, give me an average day at the moment with these hours.
Oh, well, I'm doing it for a European broadcaster, Eurosport, and play starts at midnight, GMT, which is our time.
Yep.
And, that's it. So I'm normally on the first couple of matches. I'm doing the day session, so that is the night session for me. It's actually the night session that's better over here, of course. Everything's upside down. I've been doing the day session, so sort of do one or two matches each day, so it's not super heavy in terms of the schedule, though we've had a couple of long ones, I must say. It's been great. It's been really good. I've had some great matches.
So you're doing the day session and I'm doing the night session.
Yeah.
Predominantly, because I'm in Australia, but I'm working for a British broadcaster. So
yeah, so they're saying wait till breakfast.
So we have the tennis breakfast is the show. And then, and you tend to think, then this isn't always the way, but you will get guaranteed at least one, if not two, big names, if not big matches in the night session. It doesn't mean they're going to be thrillers, but do you know what I mean? In terms of, like, if he who shall not be named was here, he would largely play in the evening. He'd have a couple during the day. Do you see? So I think the thinking is the night session, due to scheduling, something will happen. Like there's a huge match tomorrow, which is going to be Ash Barty against Amanda Anisimova. And
ooh,
I don't know if you have this trouble. I have a lot of trouble saying Anisimova, and I have to pause before I say it.
Anisimova?
Yeah. I don't...
I was struggling, actually. Last night, I was doing Zidanšek, and I was pausing before that one a bit. I don't know why. Sometimes they just don't quite flow off the tongue.
Yeah. If you said Amanda Anisimova over and over again... You know,
oh, yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful.
It's a bit of a tongue twister, that one. So
are you doing Barty and Anisimova? Is that your showdown match?
That will be our first match. But my pick's gone. Amanda Anisimova knocked out my pick. don't laugh. And my other pick initially was he who shall not be named. So you could say I'm two for two, but I did correct that to Medvedev, and that's fine. So let's see where we are now then.
Oh, is it?
I had a...
Fine, fair enough. Let's just make
I had a few picks. I've actually had a debate, a discussion with Lindsay Davenport this week about what makes a dark horse.
Uh-huh,
so
yes.
what would you characterise as a dark horse? So if you had to lay out the perimeters for what could or couldn't be a dark horse in a Grand Slam, what would your yes and no's be?
To be honest, I would think that it's really straightforward. I think if you are not in the top five favourites going into the event, then you're a dark horse. So if I were to say that Anisimova is my dark horse, that means that, not now, but say at the beginning of the event, that means that I have people that I think are going to win it above her, but she could be a dark horse and sneak around the outside. And, you know, you could see that happening. I think that's as straightforward as that.
You've been quite generous. So I would say definitely you can't have anyone in the top 10.
Right.
I don't think someone in the top 10 can be a dark horse.
What about on the men's side?
I don't think someone in the top 10 can be a dark horse.
What?
If you're inside the top 10, surely you've done enough to be in with a chance of being there and thereabouts, and it can't be a massive surprise if you were then to win.
Oh, I don't know. I think, you know, if he who shall not be named was here, then I think everybody else is a bit of a dark horse, apart from maybe Medvedev. No one else has won it. Well, apart from
We've never not said his name as much. It's absolutely incredible. So my dark horse is Simona Halep.
Right, in the women's.
Not in the top 10.
Yes, okay, fine.
Yeah. And Lindsay Davenport said categorically, I am not allowed Simona Halep.
Well, because she's won slams.
She just said, how can you have someone like Simona Halep as your dark horse? Chanda Rubin, who was alongside me, she was very onto the Simona Halep being dark horse. But Lindsay Davenport said, there is nothing I could say, and we were live on air, that would convince her to agree to Simona Halep being a dark horse.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's fairly strong, I suppose, past achievements. But, yeah, I don't know. A dark horse is a horse that is sneaking around, like sneaks up around the outside, right? That's the point of it.
Yeah.
They're dark. They come around the outside and they win right at the end. Everybody's focused on the flurry of colour and everything happening in the real mix of the pack. And the dark horse just sort of runs their own race, comes around the outside and wins. We've seen it before. Absolutely. Particularly on the women's side, you know, and a couple of times on the men's. I think Cilic was a dark horse when he won. So, yeah, for me, that's what a dark horse is. And, yeah, I think that's just it's just a straightforward. Somebody who's not expected to win. Somebody's not at the front of the pack. They're not leading the pack. They're not right up there in the mix. And I think I would probably side with Davenport in that I don't think Halep is a dark horse.
No, well, you've just gone again. You're against your whole argument. You said anyone outside the top five could be a dark horse, and now you're not letting me have the 14th seed as my dark horse. You've completely gone back on your argument.
I love disagreeing with you, though. So I'm changing the goalposts. No,
we can't.
I didn't say top
yes,
five
did.
In the world.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't. I said
yes,
top five picks. So if I were here pre-tournament,
right,
and I were
come
to
on
list,
then, give me,
and I would say
give me your top five.
Barty's the favourite. Osaka's
yes.
the second favourite. But
yes.
Dosa would be third favourite.
Yes.
Then I would have put in Kontaveit, maybe.
Muguruza?
And then, yeah, possibly Muguruza. Yeah, but okay. I don't know. Okay, fine.
So
I'll give it to you, because otherwise I'm going to get in trouble.
I love the way you said, and because we do this and we can see each other because we've got the WhatsApp video. When you said, I'm going to give it to you, you just turned away from me. You just went, I'll give it to you. And like you had your head to the
side.
As if I'm not going to. Look, I need Halep because I've lost everyone else. So I've lost my dark horse in the men's. I've lost my contender in the women's. Speaking of dark horses, we can apply mm-hmm. that to Emma Raducanu at the US Open because she was 150 and stormed through and did it.
I think
and
that I've got, might qualify.
I think just about qualifies. And can I just say, I think we've seen a different side to her again at the US Open. I think, firstly, can you explain to some people listening? Because I saw some people on social media saying, blister? What's wrong with her? Blister. We all get blisters. And explain how hampering a blister can be like that in that position, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrendous. Absolutely. Blisters on the hands are something you never want to suffer with. We know the Rafa tape that he's got everywhere to prevent that. He's got them on sort of all the fingers. Of course, you develop hard skin, but especially when you go somewhere hot and sweaty, or if you haven't been somewhere hot and sweaty for a while, then, you know, you're obviously going to soften up your skin. You can wear it away, but it's excruciatingly painful. Absolutely. I mean, we still remember Hyun Chung pulled out with his blisters. I mean, biggest moment of his career. He's never been back anywhere like that since. And he had to pull out. Was that semis he had to pull out? Was it semis? Yeah. Semis. I mean, it's remarkable.
Marin Cilic at Wimbledon. Final, yeah. Blisters. Because in the days leading up to it, in all the player bits and pieces where they lay things on for the players, there was somewhere where you could go and get a manicure and a pedicure. And so he had a bit of time off and he thought, oh, look, you know what? I'll get a pedicure. But what did it do? It made his feet lovely and soft. He had baby soft skin on his feet, which in your line of work is not ideal.
No, it's not ideal at all. You need to work hard to sort of get that hard skin so that it's not going to be too affected. But yeah, no, really painful on the hand, because also the racket moves as well when you're playing. You don't just hold it, especially when you're sweaty. It slips around, and each time it does that, it hurts. And then on top of that, because it hurts so much, you're sort of wincing before you hit the shot. So you get that bit of tension, you know it's gonna hurt, and you sort of have to do it. It's massively distracting as well, massively distracting. How you can sort of carry on and think about the tennis is really tough. So yeah, it's very unfortunate when that happens, and you just have to try and find a way to get through if you can. Treat it, and other times you just have to rest. I mean, Chung had to rest for months to let those blisters recover. Yeah. They were that bad. Months. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not it's not fun at all. It's really painful.
And Emma Raducanu said afterwards that some members of her team didn't even want her to go out and play the match. But what we're beginning to love about her is just sort of that grit, that determination to go out there to see what she could do. And then all the slicing. I mean, she won't need to work on slice forehands for a while in practice, because she did it for a couple of hours. But the fact that she even got that match with Danka Kovanec to a deciding set, I think is really impressive. The fact that the head stayed up, the shoulders stayed up, they didn't dip. The attitude, it comes back. Something we talked about all through the US Open is her attitude, again, was absolutely spot on.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, this is a crazy time for her, isn't it? We've talked a lot about, I mean, how do you get used to this? And everybody's sort of questioning you if you're not getting used to it quickly. You know, you feel like it could take a while to get used to this sort of lifestyle and whatever, you know, you're being on the tour. So, you know, she got a good win, I think, in the first round, which was a big boost to the confidence. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, it has been a few months and people are sort of questioning, like, oh, well, is this wrong? Is that wrong? Why isn't she settling down? Because it's crazy. It's just going to be crazy for a while. She's probably going to have to come through the other side at Wimbledon, because I cannot explain to people the level of scrutiny that she will be under at Wimbledon. If they think, her and her family, if they think that it was bad at the US Open, it doesn't, you know, the thing was, is that at the US Open, it was coming because of what she was doing, because of the results. This time at Wimbledon, and it was the same thing at Wimbledon last year, it came because of what she was achieving. And also being British and who she is, that was sort of a side part. Going into Wimbledon this year, the hoopla that will be around her will be purely because of who she is. Because she wouldn't have done anything yet. She would have just turned up and had a few practices. And obviously, yes, you earn that sort of pressure because it's what she did last year. But, you know, the pressure sort of developed through Wimbledon last year, and then it developed through the US Open last year. Because it's not like after Wimbledon, everybody had great expectations at the US Open. She was in qualifying. So it did sort of reset and start again. There's no resetting now. There's no starting again. There's no sort of like, oh, let's see this build up in a slam. And you see, like, a lot of players who do sort of fall away from the very top of the game, that they sort of get that back before they can then push on again. Somebody like a Kerber, number one in the world, struggled with an awful lot of it. But then once she dropped down to 20, and then it takes a long time, but when they finally stop the expectation and the sort of the first round, like, right, what are you going to do here? When they finally say, oh, let's just sit back and see what happens, that's when you've got that room to sort of breathe and stuff. But that's not happening for a very long time for Emma. I don't think it will ever happen at Wimbledon again. Never, ever. You know, she is the biggest sports superstar in this country, I think, without question. And Wimbledon is always a very bizarre time. You know, tennis is not the biggest sport in this country, but it becomes the biggest sport for those 2 weeks. And yeah, it's gonna be crazy. I remember speaking to somebody after the US Open, somebody quite close to her, and they were saying how, like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's gonna die down at some point. And I was like, well, I'd look at it as it'll come in waves, because I didn't want to freak them out, but I know what will be coming at Wimbledon, and it's going to be mega. So it's like, if you see it in waves, there's going to be a wave of it again. There'll be a wave when she wins a Grand Slam like US Open. There'll be a wave at the grass court season. That's just sort of it. But it's madness.
But it's even different now when you think this is just her third Grand Slam, and that at the US Open she came through qualifying. There was a little bit of interest in the British press, and it started to gather. This was a completely different kettle of fish. Not only do you see her picture in and around Melbourne Park, so by the tram stops they have different posters of sort of different words, and you've got on them Osaka, Tsitsipas, Raducanu, and then within the ground you see more posters and bits and pieces. An example of how things have changed is Media Day. Now, Media Day, they will hold press conferences in the main press conference room or in side rooms. Then there's a balcony where they'll come out and do TV and radio interviews. Now, when I was interviewing Harriet Dart and Heather Watson, and Harriet Dart was talking about listening to our podcast, which I thought was very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. So hello if you're listening. But she would come out, she'd just sort of wander out with the bag, pop it down, sit and have a chat. We had a chat before, we had a chat afterwards. It's all very laid back. There was no sort of time limit on the interview. You know? Emma Raducanu comes out later, and there's an entourage. I'm going to call in an entourage. You know, there was the agent.
How many?
I think there was about four. And because you've got a WTA person, you've got an agent. Well, there's sort of two agents. There's like the big agent and the other agent. You see what I mean? There's like agents within agents. See what I mean?
Yeah.
There's like maybe the traveling agent and a bigger agent. And it's now it's kind of more sort of three questions. Got three questions. So when I interviewed Andy Murray, again, there was no one entourage with him. There was
no
his agent. There was someone from the ATP, but it was like three questions, you know, with Heather Watson and Dan Evans and Harriet Dart. We could sort of sit. It was a lot more relaxed. There's that extra bit of pressure when you're doing an interview and they're sort of standing nearby listening, or you have to wrap it up, or there's two or three questions. And that comes when you get that different level of player. And Emma Raducanu is that different level of player now. You know, she came out, she had a lot of media commitments to do as well. It was the main interview room, it was this, it was that, it was out here for sort of three questions. And, you know, it will never be as it was. But the funny thing is, she didn't really know as it was, because she didn't have an as it was. See, that's again, maybe that's a good thing that she didn't have an as it was. So she hasn't gone from being in a side room with a couple of members of the press speaking to her. This is all really she's ever known. So maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Sure, but it's got to be exhausting, hasn't it? I mean, it's tiring for you guys because there's an extra layer of tension. It's going to be the same for her. It's the same, you know, with any conversation, it works both ways. So, you know, it's going to have pros and cons. Pros, they'll be able to manage her time better, make her media commitments more efficient because there's going to be a lot of them. But yeah, the cons are, you know, are you going to enjoy it in that sort of environment? You know, can you have a nice chat and a laugh and a conversation? Not really. You're just going to answer questions and move on and that's it. So that'll be interesting. I mean, I imagine that she's going to have her own, not her own episode, but she's going to feature very heavily in the Netflix documentary if they allow it, possibly
during the grass, as I was saying. I mean, that would be the golden... If I was the Netflix producer, you'd be going, what we need is access to Emma Raducanu during Wimbledon, because that's where the circus is going to be absolutely insane. But would she want to add to that circus? Would, you know, or would she want to not do it then and do it another time? Maybe they would do it with her defending her US Open title instead. I mean, she's going to have a say in this, you know, because we've been sat around, you know, if we've been waiting for matches or whatever it is, I've been writing out a list of all the players that I would want them to sort of feature and focus on.
Oh, good. Yes, let's do this, because we did this on air today, our list of...
Oh, you did?
There's some we know are confirmed, and
yes,
then we were
yes, who
asked
are they?
To...
Who are they?
Well, tell me who's on your list and let's see. Or who do you think is confirmed? Who do you think are the ones who are nailed on to feature WTA ATP?
Well, I heard that Sabalenka has been featured at the Australian Open.
Yep.
And then there was that they've been following Fritz, haven't they?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I did find it really funny in the press conference before the tournament started, where Zverev was asked about the Netflix documentary and he said, yeah, no, it's great. I guess they haven't started filming yet because I haven't heard from them. And they were like, oh, no, they're filming with other people. So I'm sure he'll have his time, but it's just not for the Australian.
But you wonder, will he have his time, or will everything that's gone on off the court affect it? It's going to be really interesting. I think they've got a decision to make there, because there is lots of baggage that goes with Zverev. But on the flip side, he's the world number three and could be a Grand Slam champion at the end of next week.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? It's going to be very interesting whether they sort of wait later in the year to see if things are in a different situation with him or what they've got the full season to do. So who else is confirmed? You tell me.
Okay, so from what I believe, the confirmed people are Tsitsipas, Sakkari.
Yes.
Sabalenka.
Well, that's great, because my episode 6 is the Greeks. So, Stefan
Maria.
Well,
hang on a second. You've actually done episodes?
I have. Yeah, I'm absolutely. I'm sending this to Netflix. If they
need... You had time, didn't you?
We were waiting for a long match to finish.
Two couples feature.
Yeah, so Gem's Life.
Yep. And
yeah, that's my episode 2, Gem's Life. Okay. Couples.
Yeah, the other couple.
Who's the other couple?
Oh,
the other couple. Sorry. They're not in my thing. But maybe that would be one episode of following the two couples. So you've got Gem's Life, who are sort of the funny TikTokers, and then you've got the beautiful pair of Tomljanovic and Berrettini.
Now, they're the only ones I think I've heard of confirmed. And then, like you, I was just so like, they have to do a Russians episode. The Russians have to have an episode.
Episode 3, Russian Mafia Men. That's the title.
Wow. Okay, what's episode 1, by the way?
They're not in the mafia. What do you mean? What's that? Right, here we go. Episode 1, Deportation. I think they can fill an episode with no tennis being played at all. They can fill an episode.
Oh, wow, okay.
That's going to be so painful for everyone, though, because we're going to sit there and it's going to be like, this is about tennis, showing the world about tennis. This is the entry for new fans to get involved in tennis. We're not going to see any tennis in the first episode.
Netflix will have been rubbing their hands together with joy. They get a deportation in the first series of this new series. I mean, they were probably celebrating in their offices.
Amazing.
Okay, so how do you follow the deportation episode?
Well, it was episode 1, Deportation, episode 2, yep, Gem's Life. And I will put in the other couples. Look, there's obviously going to be other people featuring along the way, but they tend to have a storyline per episode. So we could do couples. So Berrettini and Tomljanovic can get some airtime there. I think that's fair enough. Episode 3 was Russian Mafia Men, which I think is, there's no insinuation.
Slightly stereotypical. Well, no, slightly.
No, but it's just because there's like a group of them. That's my whole thing. Anyway,
that makes them a mafia.
Sorry,
right.
If I've offended anyone. Okay. Yeah. My
I apologise on Naomi's behalf. Right.
Episode 4 is... Alcaraz and Nadal, Alcaraz being the new Nadal and Nadal being on his way out, and you know the combination, right, yeah. And Alcaraz is now, he's lost the sleeves and everything, so we could have a little look at that. Episode 5, I just put in here Coco Gauff, but I sort of feel
on her
like
own.
Generally youngsters. Generally Youngsters.
Just yeah. Generally. That's not a very snappy title, Generally Youngsters. We'll have to work on that episode title because that doesn't work.
I just wrote it. Okay.
Generally Youngsters then we've got doesn't work.
An episode on the Greeks, as we were saying. I think that would be really fascinating. The big guys, Opelka and Isna.
I was
you don't want that episode.
I won't watch that episode, and I didn't want Opelka in it, but Laura Robson was saying that you have to because he's so opinionated, and even if you don't agree with his opinions, he'd be very interesting to have in it.
Yeah, I think they would be fascinating.
Well, I think fascinating's, I think you've gone a little bit far with that episode. And I think the episode comes quite early.
You got to do Nadal at French Open. I mean, you can't not follow Nadal at French Open.
Right, okay.
Radha and Andy at Wimbledon. Right. And of course, the Barty party at some point.
So have you, there's someone you might have missed out there. Does anyone spring to mind that you may have missed out that's quite important in the world of tennis right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
No.
The highest earning female sportswoman in the world?
Oh, Osaka. And do you know what? Yeah, you're right. That's fair enough. And the reason I took her out is because I just didn't think that she would do it. Because I thought that she's done her Netflix series, isn't she?
Yeah, which was also a point that was made earlier. But it's still on Netflix. Not like she's having to jump to a rival. And surely she'd want to be part of the, or surely the WTA would push for her to be a part of this because she's so important.
Right, okay.
Would you not agree?
Yeah, but
do you think?
Look, it's going to be up to players as to whether they sign on or not.
Apparently, they're being told that if they sign on, it's warts and all.
Ooh.
So they're sort of saying, you can't just come on and be smiley, 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 life is great. Apparently, Netflix are saying, we want to see everything behind the curtains, through the door, under the whatever, everything.
Well, that's right, isn't there? I mean, it's one thing giving them access, but, you know, tennis does not have a huge amount of access. You know, we talk about how this is the company that brought us Drive to Survive. I'm a big fan of the show. But just naturally in Formula One, the level of access they have, I mean, journalists just roam around the paddock on the grid 2 minutes before they start racing. They're just, you know, there's all sorts of celebrities and journalists and TV crews just grabbing people, interviewing them. So they're just used to the media having more access, I think, in that sport. And in tennis, it is very controlled. You know, you are not allowed in the player lounge at Grand Slams. We are kept very, very separate. The players are very, very well protected. A lot of people say they are far too protected. They don't actually have a huge amount of press obligations in comparison to other sports as well. There's a lot that there's optional that they can choose to do, but in terms of the mandatory stuff, it's not that high of a commitment. So it's going to be interesting because they're going to have to give a lot. They can't just sort of sit back and think that Netflix are going to do the job of making tennis look fantastic. It's, you know, I think the players have got to get on board, as you were saying. It's got to be that warts and all. That's what people are interested in. They're interested in the stuff where it's not great as well. So I hope that they pick the right sort of players. But I think, you know, if you've got Steph and Maria confirmed for the Greek episode, I think that's episode 5 on my list, and, you know, Sabalenka, those sorts of, you know, it feels like they're the right sort of people. You can see them really getting on board.
How about a wild card of Bublik thrown in there?
Yeah.
And someone else who you didn't mention, where do you stand on this? Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah. I would love to have Nick in it. And look, I've always been a big fan of Nick. And if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, back when he was actually a tennis player, I have always massively defended him and who he is and what he brings to the sport. And I can't really understand everybody's problem with him. But he doesn't play anymore. Like, it's all very well turning up for the Australian Open and winning a match, but like, he doesn't play. Like, the last 2 years, I can't remember how many matches he's played, but it's just, he's not an ATP player anymore. Yeah. Like, that's just how it is. Because it's been a long time now since he was actually relevant putting himself in positions to beat the big guys, because you can only beat the big guys if you win the matches to get there. So you know, I mean, look, he had a crack at Medvedev, didn't he? Which was great, and I'm sure it was fun, but he's just not been playing. That's just it. So for me, he's not really part of the tour anymore. I don't know. Do you disagree, or would you just think, nah, we have to have him in?
I think the big problem is, you're right, he doesn't travel. So, you know, the next time we see him could quite... Well, he likes Acapulco for the partying, and he loves Wimbledon. But outside of that, I can't see him... Look, at the moment, he's very happy off the court, which is a big thing for Kyrgios to be settled to be enjoying himself. But he loves being at home, and he loves the people he has around him. There was even whispers going around, I think it was an American TV, that he's going to retire at the end of this year. Now, I don't know if that's based in anything, or it was just loose tongues, loose lips. But they're saying he might retire. And it doesn't seem that far-fetched. What he'll do with the rest of his life, I'm not sure, once he officially retired from tennis. But I think, I don't know, I'm split. If I'm the director or the producer or the casting director of this Netflix documentary, you want a Kyrgios, because as frustrating as I find him to commentate on, and I'm actually getting a bit annoyed with him now, I will still watch his matches to see what happens. So tomorrow he's in the double, the special K's with Tanasi Kokkinakis. You know, they defeat the number one pairing, which is going some. I know these crowds have been a little too extreme at times, but you want to see what he's doing. You know, I'll look at what he's up to on Instagram or whatever. He brings people in. He brings a new generation in, and he brings people in. And he brings people in that don't essentially or necessarily have to love their tennis. So if I'm...
But what's
sort of
the point in having him in the documentary? Because if we're going to bring new fans in, they're going to go, wow, love this guy. I want to watch him play. When can I? You can't. He doesn't play.
Yeah, but do Netflix really care about that? They want ratings. They want good TV. Who makes good TV? Kyrgios will give you a show. You know, he might not feature in the whole thing because he doesn't play enough. But so on two sides, there's part of me that doesn't want him in because I agree with you. He doesn't travel. He barely plays tennis. But if I'm Netflix and the people high up wanting ratings, then, you know, what ratings am I going to get for Isner Opelka episode compared to what ratings am I going to get for a Kyrgios episode? So
yeah,
ratings wise, I take him.
But also, you know, when you look at Drive to Survive, the top two drivers hadn't really featured that much. In the first series, which was a huge hit, Mercedes, the top team, didn't even sign up to it. There was no access to Mercedes whatsoever. So,
yeah, but Kyrgios, you know, isn't the top two, is he?
No, but I'm saying that you don't have to have the stars. I think that they're going to focus on some smaller players, whether they're the youngsters coming up, or say smaller, but like, you know, your players ranked 50, 60, your life on tour as well. Like they're definitely going to have a big focus on that, as well as focusing at the top end of the game.
But you need to sprinkle the gold dust, the stardust. You need a little bit of sprinkling of that. And and he, as annoying as I do find him, and I'm kind of fed up of him, you know, wandering around kissing his girlfriend everywhere, just sort of do it in private. But then again, you could say, well, just don't follow him on Instagram, which is also a very good point. But, you know, people want to know what he's up to. People tune in, people watch him. And I think, as I say, I think if you're Netflix, you're a casting director, you want him, because he does bring something to it. Even if it's self-destructing, that's great.
But then
TV.
Why aren't they not with him at the Australian Open? So wouldn't that be the perfect time to do it? He's at home in Australia. He's settled. He's actually playing, which is a start as well. So,
it's true.
Maybe they've made the decision not to. Or maybe he doesn't want to do it. As I say, the players have got to okay it as well. But maybe he didn't want to do it. I don't know. Can't wait.
Sabalenka, who you mentioned, who is going to be in it. I've always had a soft spot for Sabalenka, but I've really admired how she's been lately. 70 double faults, 7-0 in 5 matches in 2022.
Mm.
70. It would break most people. We've seen Zverev not anywhere near that number, but be broken by his double faults in a match. But she has found, more recently, a way through. She has not let the head drop. I don't know what goes through her mind, if anything goes through her mind. The fact that she's still standing and she's into the round of 16 with this amount of double foot, actually there are only 10 in her last match, which is a marked improvement, is, I think it's really I think it's really impressive from Sabalenka.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, you say breaking her, like, I mean, it sort of did. She was in tears in her matches in, you know, before coming to the Australian Open because she just couldn't. It was 21 in one match alone. But even then she was toughing out. The first match there was 19 and she still won that match tight in the third set. And then there were 21 in the next match, which she lost, but she still fought all the way to the end. It was really, really tight. So she's thinking, I don't need a second serve really to get the job done. So she's just building, but I totally agree. How impressive. I mean, how can you walk on court, even as number two in the world, being like, I'm not sure I've got a serve today. Let's see what happens. And you know that she's going to be putting in the work, trying to sort it out. But, you know, there's some serious issues there. Technically, there's a bit of a problem. And obviously, mentally, it's totally gone. So wouldn't it be an incredible story if she went from that to winning? Imagine if she took the title. It'd just be bonkers.
I actually thought today when I was watching her beating Vondrousova, and again, it went the distance, I was thinking, could she go and win this? It was exactly the thought I had today as I was watching her. I just thought, hang on a second, because no one's talking about it. It's all about the top half, and rightly so, because it is stacked up there. But the bottom half has opened up. Sabalenka is the world number two. She has a massive game. She seems to be able to find a way through despite all these double faults. I mean, you just never know. I mean, look, I didn't pick her. She wasn't my dark horse. She wasn't my main one. But I don't know. I've really been impressed with her, and how, and the attitude, and the fact how she's got through this. What, Andy Murray? Where are you on? Where are you on Murray after the Australian Open?
What do you mean? I mean, it's great, isn't it? I think it's all really positive.
It's positive, but then, as he said himself, very disappointing, that performance against Taro Daniel. And does he want to continue? Yes. But does he want to keep going to Grand Slams, losing the second round to a qualifier or such like? No. So there's been, you know, why did we get that performance against Taro Daniel?
Because he went to five sets in his first round. That's the issue. He's got to stop getting in those scraps. I know it's sort of in his DNA.
That's not going to get any easier.
I know it's not going to get any easier, but he has to find a way that when he's in a winning position to win more clinically, like he used to, if he wants to not, you know, his body, you only have one day of rest in between. You think about other sports and how much rest they get in between matches, games. You know, footballers playing a couple times a week feels like a heavy schedule. You know, these players are playing every day in sort of the smaller tournaments, but with best of five sets every other day. That is not long to recover from a five set match. It is not long. I don't care who you are. And he's not going to recover like he did when he was 25. He's not going to recover like he did when he didn't have a metal hip. He can't put himself in those situations. You know, we talked about it with Zverev, didn't we? For years, he just kept playing these five-set matches early on in slams. And it's like, okay, you're not going to win it then. You can't get to the final if you keep doing that. And then he's become more clinical and being able to sort of just churn through those matches. It's just, you know, part of the best of five format. The reason for it is the level of physicality to get to the end of a slam. And Andy knows what it takes. He's done it. He's won them. He's been in the final here five times. You know what it takes to get to the end, just to hold up physically, let alone if you can play good enough tennis. And you can't be going to five sets in that sort of situation. But still, you know, he said he was pretty happy with how his body held up, but you're not going to be fresh, you know, mentally, emotionally, all of it, you know, everything that goes with it. So there's definitely room for improvement.
Someone else whose body is holding up, and he's in a situation similar to Murray. No, he doesn't have a metal hip, but he's had a lot of injuries in the past, and he's doing it the right way, is Gael Monfils. So
yeah,
good to see him back, and he's done it comfortably. He's comfortable because he is someone that cannot be going to five sets and 5 hours match after match after match. It's so nice to see him playing like he is at the moment. Injury-free. Philip, remember in tears, this time last year, crashed out early. There's the tears, doesn't know what to do, how long he's going to play for, etc., etc. It's so nice to see him enjoying himself and playing like he's playing.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried at one point that was sort of it for Monfils and that we weren't going to see him come back. So yeah. Really nice to see that he has just completely knuckled down and thriving really well and had a pretty kind draw, but he's absolutely maximised. He's got Ketsmanovic now to get through to the quarters. That's, you know, he's the favourite going in there. So, yeah, I mean, we all love Monfils, don't we? I don't think I know anyone who doesn't enjoy watching Monfils play. He is an absolute star. So hopefully he'll be playing for a few years more.
Oh, he's great, isn't he? One thing I'm learning about here are Australian foods. So a cornetto is called a drumstick.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did know that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that at all. What else? We had our favourite ice cream on air, as in, what is your favourite ice cream?
Okay, yeah. And what is yours?
We had a vote. Well, we had a vote for a fab, which are disgusting.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I'd never pick a fab. Terrible.
The thing with sprinkles.
Is that what won?
Horrible.
Did people vote for that?
No, that didn't. No, everyone could pick their favourite. I don't think I necessarily have a favourite. People sort of giving their sort of favourite ice creams. And another one was a knobbly bobbly.
A knobbly bobbly.
Have you ever
wow.
Have you ever had a knobbly bobbly?
No.
Have you?
No.
It's
no.
I've never had a knobbly bobbly, but that got quite a few votes. It's amazing the things we talk about that are not actually linked to tennis at all. But we had a little vote on ice cream, and they were telling me some, I've already forgotten them, but some names of Australian ice creams that you can't get over here. So I've been learning some different words of different things. The old Vegemite Marmite thing comes. Did you know that a British, yeah, that Lynx deodorant have made a Lynx deodorant with Marmite?
With Marmite in it?
Yeah, so it's smell.
It's disgusting.
It's Lynx oh, Africa, no, and Marmite. Or if you're listening in Australia, Vegemite, as yes, is the equivalent.
Well, that's, I think, a bit of a,
but I can, you
a
know
gimmick,
what?
Isn't it?
But I think it might be quite clever because I don't like the stuff. I think it's disgusting. But some people love it. So love it. So imagine if you're a guy, you spray yourself with this thing with Marmite in it, and a woman walks past and loves Marmite, that's actually going to work. She's going to sniff
oh,
you.
Oh, you're going full into the branding here. Love it or hate it.
Yeah, because I don't,
as if that's a real thing.
No, because I think it is. Because I hate it. Like, there's no in between. I don't think there is an in between with it. I think you love it or you hate it. Generally speaking, do you love it?
I don't think so. I think that was just branding, just strong marketing from them.
Genuinely,
I wouldn't want to be anywhere near somebody sprayed with Marmite. It sounds very sticky.
Well, it's not sticky. It's deodorant. But you get that waft and you'd think, oh, I want to. I don't know what you'd want to do.
I
at
feel
that
like
point.
We're losing the plot in our sleep-deprived state now.
And we also, the other thing in Australia, they have rats, which is,
yeah,
different to us. So we have, we don't have lats, do we? Have L-A-F-T. We have lateral flows in the UK. They have rats, yeah, rapid antigen test. So it's really strange when you walk along. So I go for my run. You're very proud of me, been running, and Melbourne's very hilly.
Good.
And there's lots of dogs. So lots of hills and lots of dogs. So that's been quite a challenge. But you run past a shop or walk, and there's a sign in the window that says, we have no rats today. Which I the first time I was like, well, that's a positive that you haven't got any rats.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why you'd, yeah, don't know why you'd advertise the fact you haven't got any rats. And then I realised when I went to Melbourne Park and a lady came around and said, do you want your rat? And I was like, okay. I mean, you just say okay, don't you? And then she put the test in a little bag on my desk because we take a rat every day. It's
right.
Not, it's not mandatory, but you can. So I go to the media every day. I can't say, can I have a rat? I refuse to say, can I have a rat? So I just say, can I have a test? And the lady will say, do you want a rat? And I say, can I have a test? Because I can't.
It's a good way around it.
It's just weird, isn't it? So rats, that's the other thing. So they have rats out here. So I'm learning all different kind of food stuff, bits and pieces, which we go off on tangents, a bit like we do. And one last thing, because it's yeah, well into Sunday now. I just saw something on social media. One of our listeners sent it to us. You know those Hoover things that do their own thing?
Yeah.
One,
yes, the Roombas.
Yeah, but one.
I know what they are. You don't. What do you mean? Do you know those Hoover things that do their own things? As if you're bringing this up for the first time in the podcast. This is outrageous behaviour.
But apparently, one escaped from a hotel in Amsterdam. Can you imagine?
They're coming for us.
There's an open door. This little round thing sort of whirs out the front door and off it goes.